The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good evening. Tonight I thought of talking a little bit about mindfulness again. I talked about that last week and from a different angle this week. And again, I'd like to kind of start with a little bit of a motivation. You know, why do we do this? Why are we interested in cultivating mindfulness? What's the point? I think the really the most basic reason or point behind mindfulness, which we could define perhaps as the ability or the awareness of what's happening in the present moment, you know, so that we're aware of what's happening while it's happening. And so much as we start to explore and meditate and try to be aware of what's happening in our minds, we so often see that a lot of our time is spent thinking about the past, trying to revive and revise the past, you know, to create different scenarios in the past. And another part of our time is spent in the future, trying to figure out how our lives will be in the future, fantasizing or planning or organizing. And in those times when we are lost in those worlds of past or future, essentially, we are missing our lives. We are not here for the only place where anything ever happens, and that is in the present moment. And we think we're living our lives when we're thinking about the past and thinking about that and thinking about the future, but we're essentially the only place we can experience anything and the only place we can actually make any choices about anything is right in the present moment. And so without the mindfulness, what we're allowing to happen is to have essentially our habits, our patterns, our conditioning, the ways in which we've been, the ways in which our lives have come to this point, will just tend to go in that same direction, out of habit almost. As the Buddha says, whatever we frequently ponder, that becomes the direction or the inclination of our minds. And so without this capacity or ability to stay here in the present moment, we lose the possibility of shaping or guiding our minds in a different direction. And so what I'd like to explore tonight is how to encourage, one way to think about encouraging our minds to stay present. And I'm going to come at it from a kind of an unusual direction, perhaps, not by saying, hey, let's like hold on to the present moment and let's like, you know, just make all the effort to stay here now. Instead, what I'm going to suggest is that one of the ways we can encourage our minds to start to be present is to notice where we're not present. Notice those times, those ways, those places that our minds get lost. Where do we tend to lose mindfulness? And so, you know, I think often if we're cultivating mindfulness, if we're cultivating this practice of being here in the present moment, our relationship to when we get lost can be a conflicted one. You know, we think, oh, we wake up in that moment and it's like, I was lost again. I've got to hold on to the present moment. And what I would like to suggest is that if instead you take some level of curiosity in what ways the mind kind of gets lost, then we can use that information. And that can help us to find ways to let the mindfulness infiltrate those places where we tend to get lost, those places where we tend to not be mindful. There are, I'd say, a lot of the ways in which we lose mindfulness, in which we get lost, or places or familiar areas in which we have trouble being mindful. There's some kind of habit or some kind of hook that perhaps we're not seeing. And so if we can get curious about those hooks, not as a way of thinking like, I'm a bad person or this is a bad thing, but just more curiosity. This one kind of exploration for me, this curiosity about those places where I tend to not be able to be mindful, has been the most useful tool for me to expand the terrain or the states or the to expand the possibility for being mindfulness more and more continuously. So I want to explore this from a bunch of different angles. There's different ways our minds get hooked, different ways our minds get hooked out of the present moment or tend to get lost. So I'll start by just looking at some of these different ways. One of the ways or one of the things we might notice in terms of the mindfulness getting lost is we might notice that our minds, that the mindfulness gets lost when we're doing specific activities. Maybe we notice when we're driving, we're not at all mindful. Or when we're having conversations on the telephone, or when we're washing dishes, or any number of activities, we might just notice that there's a kind of like a black hole there. Maybe whenever we enter the kitchen, it's like a black hole of mindfulness. So just check out and see, are there specific activities that are very challenging for you to be mindful of? Just kind of, you could review your day, think back on your day. It's like, wow, I know that I was mindful or had a sense of being present when, I got up in the morning or something. But, as soon as I started brushing my teeth, that was it. I got lost. So just kind of be curious about that. What is it? What kinds of activities do we lose awareness in? This is a kind of a simple way to begin to allow the mindfulness to expand into new areas or to expand into places where we tend to not be present. Because when it's connected to a particular activity, like driving, for instance, then noticing that, it's like noticing that, I'm not very mindful when I'm driving, or I'm not very mindful when I'm walking the dog, or I'm not very mindful when I'm going to the bathroom, or whatever it is. If you see areas where you find that you're not mindful, then you might be able to, seeing that, add a little bit of interest or curiosity, or exploration of, okay, I know that I'm getting ready to get in the car to drive. I'm mindful now. Or, just even in the lightest of ways. I know that I'm present now. And let's see if I can add some curiosity, not to try to hold myself there, not to try to say, I am going to be mindful while I drive, but more a curiosity of what happens. What happens when I'm driving that my mindfulness gets lost? Even with that just that simple intention to say, oh, okay, I tend to get lost while I'm driving, so let's see if I can understand why that happens. Then you might find at some point that maybe you don't remember to start being mindful while you're driving, but you wake up while you're driving, and it's like, wow, there I was lost while I was driving. And in that moment of waking up, right there, there's probably a little bit of information. Maybe what you see is that your mind is lost in planning or lost in talking to the person who you're going to see. Often when we're in motion or in action, we're in a car going somewhere, we're going to do something, and so often our minds would tumble forward into that activity, planning the future. And so you might see that there's kind of that planning energy going on and be able to wake up and see, oh, wow, it's not only about driving in the car, it's actually about kind of having some energy. Maybe it's excitement about being with that person, or maybe it's anxiety about being with that person. So you can begin to wake up into, you know, just with the curiosity or just the kind of curiosity about what's going on there. We might begin to see some underlying habits and patterns. Or maybe we just see, you know, this just tends to be a place where my mind goes, this isn't an important place, this is not an important place to be mindful, and it just checks out. Or we see, perhaps we might see just a simple habit of mind that tends to take us out of the present moment. This was one of my explorations on a retreat. I began to get curious because I noticed that whenever I went into the bathroom, I would be pretty present. I mean, I was practicing. It was a long retreat, and I was pretty mindful. But I would consistently find myself lost in thought, unmindful, waking up, staring at myself in the mirror when I had gone into the bathroom. And I was, like, really curious about this. It's like, wow, you know, it's like there was this little black hole there. I was pretty present, and then suddenly I was not. And what happened? And so I kind of got curious about it. And, you know, for several days, I would simply just, I mean, so it was like I knew I was going into the bathroom, and it's like, okay, let's see if I can notice what happens there. And I wasn't, like, trying to force myself to stay present, but it's more like, what happens? You know, why does this happen? So just a curiosity of what goes on. And so I just started kind of being curious about it. And for several days, it was like there was very little movement. You know, it's just like I kept noticing myself staring at myself in the mirror. But I just kept being curious about it. And then one day while I was washing my hands, I was pretty present, and I noticed the intention to look up. I noticed just a simple intention to look at myself in the mirror. And noticing that, you know, I let it happen. And I saw myself, well, now I'm being mindful while I'm looking at myself in the mirror. I'm present for that. And what I noticed in that moment was just like, you know, it was just a habit. You know, it wasn't like some deep, like, you know, emotional thing of wanting to be seen or, you know, it wasn't anything really major, but it was just a habit. And so sometimes our mindfulness sinks are just simply habitual ways that we're used to engaging in the world. And a little bit of interest can start to allow the mindfulness to move outwards into those areas. Sometimes we can explore, you know, we might start to see, for instance, with driving, you know, perhaps for some of you it might be like, you know, getting lost in, for some people it might be getting lost in where you're going. For others it might be getting lost in the emotions of how the people are driving around you, you know. So if you start to see what kind of thing, you know, add some interest to, oh, driving, I'm getting ready to drive, so what is it? You know, what happens here? If you wake up noticing that you're, you know, swearing at the other drivers, okay, so perhaps what's going on is this: you're seeing things and reacting to what you're seeing without noticing that reaction is happening. So one tool that we could use there is if you see that what's tending to happen in a particular area, like with me looking in the mirror, I got lost out the eye door. You know, it's like sight was a huge way in which my mindfulness would just kind of leak out. And so you can, if you see that there's a kind of particular, for some it might be hearing, you know, seeing is one for many of us where our mindfulness does tend to get lost. And one thing you could explore is just being curious about what might it mean to be mindful, aware, you know, get into the car and be very aware that seeing is happening. You know, that yes, you're seeing people weave, or yes, you're seeing somebody come up and cut off in front of you. But if you can be aware that you're seeing, then you have some opportunity to recognize the dislike of what happens before you react to it, the movement of anger that might arise from there. One, you can just kind of just keep seeing. Seeing is happening. Keeping the attention in that domain where the mind tends to kind of get lost or go out that door. So that's looking at particular activities, things that you're doing that mindfulness can get lost in. Another area that's pretty common for us to lose mindfulness is in states of body, in particular pain, when we're experiencing painful sensations in the body. Very often we have reactivity to that and so have trouble staying present for it. So, you know, this can be a little bit of a challenge, you know, because we might think, well, why on earth would I even want to be present for pain? And again, you know, just reminding us all that if we are not present, if we're not aware in the present moment, how we are responding to what's happening is coming out of our conditioning, out of our habits, out of our patterns. And so often what happens when we are not present and mindful for pain, we are, you know, our minds are doing something with that. It may be reacting, it may be, you know, creating problems in our mind, like, you know, this knee pain is like, I'm never going to be able to sit again. You know, it's like, I'm never going to be able to walk again. And our minds are just proliferating with ideas about what the pain is, and not really actually meeting the pain. And what often happens around pain is that there's the physical pain and a lot of emotional reactivity to that pain. Habitually, when we experience some kind of physical pain, there is a kind of an emotional dislike of it, a wanting to get rid of it, a wanting to avoid it or change it, that has a kind of an aversive quality, maybe an anger or an irritation or a frustration. And so there's the unpleasant state of the body that's happening. And to that, our habitual way of dealing with the pain can tend to bring in a mental unpleasant experience, the frustration, the anger, the aversion. And those two multiply each other. So the experience as a whole feels way worse than if it were just the physical experience of pain. So that's one reason why being mindful of pain can be helpful, because it at least takes out the mental gyrations around the pain. And, you know, the other piece of it, I just want to say, because, you know, it can be interpreted here that I'm going to say, what I'm saying is, you know, you should just grin and bear it, grit yourself through pain. And I'm not suggesting that, but I am suggesting that it's very useful to see how much of the experience of pain is the actual physical sensation and how much of it is the mind saying, this is a problem. In much of my exploration around pain, the vast majority of the reason why it feels like this is not tenable, why this is not acceptable, is because of the mind. It's because the mind is contracted, because the mind is rebelling. And often, not always, there are definitely times when I have been sitting and I realize, yep, that's the pain of my sciatic nerve. That's the pressure on my sciatic nerve. And that pain is not one that is good to allow to continue, because if I know from experience, if I let that one continue, my leg goes numb for a long time. This is not a good idea. So, you know, there's certain kinds of pain that we can get familiar with and just simply recognize this is a pain that's not helpful to allow to continue. But much of our reactivity to unpleasant, uncomfortable physical experience, we have a really quick trigger reaction to say, you know, this is not acceptable and I need to fix this or change this. And actually, much of the time, it's pretty minor. It's a little twinge or it's a little ache. And most of the experience of pain is coming because our mind is telling us this is a problem. And so I would just like to encourage you to check it out, explore. The first thing to just explore is, what is the actual physical experience of pain? You know, is it a burning? Is it a pressure, a pulling, a tightness, a tension, a contraction? And what is the reaction? See if you can tease those two apart. So just starting to tease those two apart can be really helpful. So not to force yourself to sit through pain, but just to even give yourself a few moments to see if you can tease these two apart, because not only is that mental reactivity to pain something that really exacerbates the experience of unpleasant sensation in our present moment, but the mental reaction to pain is also the place where our minds tend to get lost. We tend to go right out that door of needing to fix or change or avoid the pain. And we lose contact with the present moment. So that's one exploration around, if you see that you tend to get lost with pain, just check in. What's the actual physical sensation and what's the reactivity? And then sometimes with pain, one thing I've noticed around pain, at least, is that I will find myself lost, not particularly having stories or problems around the pain, but lost in some fantasy, or perhaps one of my favorite strategies around pain is that the mind starts to sing songs. And I kind of got curious about this. It's like, that's interesting. You know, can I watch this happening? You know, it's like what I discovered in this exploration around seeing that when there was pain in the body, that the mind kind of started singing songs. Well, one of the things I noticed there is that when the mind was in the songs, it wasn't particularly bothered by the pain. That was interesting, just to see that. It's like the mind has figured out some strategy in which it kind of just decouples from the pain. And it's doing this by singing a song. So it's like, okay, well, that was interesting. So I noticed I would wake up, you know, that there was some painful experience, and I'd wake up singing some song in my mind. And it's like, okay, well, I'm noticing that the mind has kind of let go of the pain. That was just interesting information right there, that there was some way that the mind had, there was a strategy that the mind had to not have to be all wound up tight about there's pain in the body. So I started exploring, you know, it's like, is it possible? And the mind has figured out this strategy of how it can unhook from the pain and not be all wound up and frustrated and angry and confused and trying to figure out how to fix it. Might it be possible to just allow the pain to be there and be present at the same time? So my first exploration around that is, can I be present, you know, for the singing? Can I know that the mind is singing? And in that exploration of like, okay, there's pain and the mind is singing, it's like the singing tends to go away when you're aware of it. And what I noticed in that was that that there had been, like, in the movement to the singing, the mind had let go of its kind of grip. It's, you know, just like really tight grip around the pain. The idea that the pain was a problem. And somehow this movement to singing, it had let go of that idea. I was curious about that. And in that being able to be present for just a few moments for the pain without the grip, I got an understanding of, oh, actually it is possible. You know, actually this isn't very painful. It's just a little like twinge here. It's like, and yet then what I saw was the habit of the mind to come back and grip around the pain. And when I saw that happen, the pain, the whole experience of pain, like shot through the roof. And I could see right very directly that the reason the pain got so strong had nothing to do with the physical experience. It was the mind. And so this was very, very, it's very helpful to see this directly. I mean, I can tell you that this is the case. I can tell you that when you're experiencing pain and you're reactive to it, really the worst part of it is the mind's reaction. But when you see it for yourself, it's got a different level of strength to the understanding that comes. We can also lose our awareness, and this starts to happen in states of pain in the body. We can also lose our awareness in states of pleasure in the body. And this can start to happen as we start to get more capacity for being present. We start, connecting and being able to be with the breath for a while, It's like, actually, that starts to feel pretty good. And then it's like we're in this pleasant place, and what happens sometimes, our mind just kind of floats off into that like pleasant haze, and it's not present anymore. So again, curiosity about where it is. Where does the mind lose touch? When we lose touch of the, if you're experiencing pleasant sensation while you are paying attention to the breath, and then the mind tends to kind of drift off into that, you're losing the joy of actually really being present for something wholesome and pleasant in the present moment. It's like there's a way in which our habit of mind is to kind of, this is pleasant, And sometimes we drift off thinking, this is so great, I'm going to meditate more, and, I'm going to go on retreat, and, we're planning how to have more of this pleasant experience in the future, and we're not experiencing it now. So again, to wake up into those places where we tend to get lost. Curiosity, what's going on there? We can also lose awareness in various states of mind, habitual states of mind in which it's really hard to be present. For each of us, I think there's some very strong habits of reactive mind that tend to be very sticky. Depression, frustration, anger, boredom, desire, confusion, anxiety, whatever it is, there tends to be a couple, several sticky places where our minds tend to not have the traction to be present for it. And so, one of the ways to start to notice where we tend to lose awareness, and this is across the board here, is start to notice where we're waking up. What is it that we're waking up into after we've been lost in thought? So, just notice where is it that we're waking up? In daily life, we may notice consistently that we're waking up driving our car, lost, we're completely lost in thought while we're driving our car. So that gives us a clue. Oh, I tend to get lost while doing that activity. Or perhaps you tend to notice that you wake up in the midst of feeling a sense of depression or anger. Again, this moment of when mindfulness comes back. I talked about this last week some, that moment when we wake up, often our relationship to that moment is to think, oh, I've been lost, that was bad, you know, what am I supposed to be doing? I'm supposed to be mindful, so let me come back to the present. That moment of waking up, that moment of remembering, we're already present, and there's something happening right there, right then, right in that moment. And very often, whatever is happening right in that moment will help us to see the places, the ways that we tend to get caught. So you might start to recognize, if you're just curious, you know, rather than having the agenda when you notice that you wake up into mindfulness, and this can be in your sitting or in daily life, rather than thinking, oh, bad, you know, need to come back to the breath or come back to my hands on the steering wheel or just something to be mindful of so that I can hold it here. Rather, see if you can be curious, what is here in the moment that mindfulness returns? You might find yourself habitually, you know, waking up into a habitual pattern of mind, like depression or boredom or confusion or anger. So waking up into that. And sometimes if you aren't curious about that moment when mindfulness returns, you might miss that there tend to be some kind of habitual mindfulness sinks, ways or places that the mindfulness tends to not be able to connect. Boredom, for instance, you know, you might even think that, you know, boredom isn't something that we're, like, if we're mindful, we wouldn't be bored. So we might have that idea about mindfulness. So we might be able to, in the waking up, recognize, oh, well, actually, the mind was kind of bored. If you can begin to recognize particular states of mind in which you wake up, again, it's like, what is it like? What's obvious in the moment when your mindfulness returns? What's the most obvious thing? Perhaps it's this experience of boredom or anger or confusion or frustration. Right there in that moment is giving you a little bit of a sense of what it's like to be aware in that place where you tend to habitually get lost. So recognizing what we wake up into, recognizing in the moment that we wake up, what kind of state of mind is here, that can help to make us curious about how might it be possible to be mindful while that state's happening, instead of the habit of not being mindful in that state. And then you might begin to recognize, I mean, actually this exploration around noticing where the mindfulness gets lost, as you start to see, oh, you know, my mind habitually gets lost when I'm bored, or my mind habitually gets lost when I'm angry. There might be the opportunity, as you see boredom come up, to begin to get curious about, well, what is it about boredom? What happens? What does the mind do with boredom? Maybe it creates a fantasy, or maybe it just kind of sinks into depression. You know, what does the mind do with boredom? Why is it that the mind does not want to go there? Why is it that, again, it could be habit, or it could be that there's something underneath, something else going on that's not quite able to be touched into yet. So just kind of opening to, okay, this is boredom. What's going on around boredom? We also might find that one of the ways or places in which our mindfulness gets lost is in states of mind. So this is related to states of mind. It's in states of mind in which habitually most people are not mindful, such as spacing out or daydreaming, you know, just like the mind, like disconnecting from the present moment. Low energy states, you know, and it almost seems that sometimes, by very definition of what spacing out is, that it would not be possible to be mindful while spacing out. And yet, because of this very exploration of being curious, you know, noticing, you know, one of the things I noticed was, yeah, when my mind spaces out, I'm not mindful. But rather than having the idea of, oh, spaced out, how can I not be spaced out so that I can be mindful? I asked the question, is it possible to be mindful of spacing out? And I discovered that yes, it actually is possible to be mindful of spacing out. It is possible to watch what happens there. I've told this story before, but I'll describe it again because it's, I think it really kind of demonstrates maybe how this can work. So I noticed one morning while I was eating that the mind was spacing out a lot. I was finding myself kind of, you know, I think I'd even stopped eating, you know, I was just kind of like, oh, eyes in a kind of a fog, you know, just not focused on anything, mind in this kind of a haze, buzzy space. And I'd wake up into that space and I'd think, oh, spaced out, okay, come back. And I was eating breakfast, so my idea was I should be mindful while I'm eating breakfast. Pay attention to the food, putting the food in the mouth, the chewing, the moving of the arm, the putting the fork down. And this was at home. This was just in my daily life. And then I'd find myself moments later spaced out again. Okay, come back, do it again. This happened enough that morning that I thought to myself, you know, let's just see. I mean, I'm present right now. Instead of like trying to hold myself here, eating breakfast, let's see if I can see what happens. Can I feel the pull to that kind of letting go? Can I see where the mind lets go of paying attention to breakfast and goes into spacing out? Can I watch that happen? And it was actually not that hard once I got curious about it. And once I let go of the idea that spacing out bad, spacing out not mindful, paying attention to breakfast mindful, once I let go of the idea that spacing out was not some place where mindfulness could happen, it actually ended up being relatively straightforward to simply watch the mind move from being present for the eating of breakfast to being in this space of buzzy, unfocused eyes. And I discovered also it was extremely pleasant. It was a very pleasant experience. So I was present for that for a little while. And then I also realized in that moment that it felt really good. So not only was pleasant, it was like, oh, thank you for letting me rest. It was the mind kind of taking rest that it needed. And so it stayed in that kind of spaced out place for, I don't know, 30 seconds, something like that. And then it was like the fog cleared. I didn't do anything. I didn't say, come back. It was like the mist lifted. The mind had taken its rest. It actually needed some rest. It took a few moments of rest, and then it was present for seeing and eating and being in the body here. It kind of just detached, the mind had detached from the body for a few minutes to rest. Once it had rested, it came back into presence, into this kind of normal presence. It was present while it was spaced out. So this kind of experience in my own practice has really infused me with interest and curiosity. If there's ever anything that I find, wow, there's kind of a habit of the mind kind of slipping out here, you know, what? Where's it getting lost? Or, you know, low energy states or really sleepy states even, you know. One whole retreat, it was like the mind was so low energy. I just was like, well, there's got to be a way to try to connect with just being low energy, as opposed to trying to think, I need to rev up the energy in order to be mindful. Can I just know, wow, you know, the mind, body and mind are really tired right now. Can that be okay? Can I be present for that? And yes. So what I've seen over and over again is that this curiosity about how can I be present for what I think I can't be present for has led to a real, like, it's like the fingers of mindfulness have just spread out into so many different areas that I would have thought there would be no way I could possibly be mindful of that. On one retreat, and this one was the real mind-blowing, this one was pretty mind-blowing, it got to the place where I could, you know, because of this whole low energy thing, you know, I was just watching, being with the low energy, there would be times when I would fall asleep. And, well, you'd think that you can't be mindful while you fall asleep, right? Actually, you can be mindful all the way from being awake, all the way through the whole falling asleep process. You can be mindful of the moment when it shifts consciousness and goes into sleep, and you can be mindful in sleep. In that, it's like, really? Really? Now, this is not something that I can do in my daily life, but, you know, it really pointed out to me, let go of any idea that there is something that you can't be mindful of. Curiosity is our ally, our real ally in opening to those places where we think it's not possible. And yes, I mean, I spent a lot of time on that retreat falling asleep, you know, noticing, yep, whoop, fell, okay, try again, whoop. Okay, try again. You know, just not giving myself a hard time, not trying to force anything else to happen, but just trying to be with what is already happening, what's already happening. It takes some trust. It takes a lot of curiosity, and it takes some trust that it's okay for anything to be happening. Now, in this exploration of noticing where our mind tends to get lost, one of the big areas that we need to be watchful for are places where our mind gets really reactive around something. And so it is possible to be mindful of anything in the abstract. And yet for each of us, in our own experience, in our own wherever we are in our own lives in this moment, there can be experiences that have so much momentum to them, so much conditioning behind them, that the ability for our mindfulness to meet them, it's like the power of that conditioning is so much stronger than our ability to be mindful. It's like a tsunami of reactivity and a little trickle of mindfulness. And we have to really honor the power of our habits and our conditioning and not beat ourselves up about, wow, I can't be mindful of that right now. and to just, you know, to recognize that, yeah, that's too strong right now. So maybe it's time to give myself a break from trying to be mindful of that right now. I've had to do this a lot, too, in this exploration, in my looking at something like self-hatred, for instance, which I've spent a lot of time doing. I spent a lot of time exploring that pattern. And there were times when the self-hatred was stronger than my ability to be present for it. When I could see that the self-hatred was swamping my mindfulness, I found other strategies. I didn't say, oh, I should be able to be mindful of the self-hatred. I can be mindful of anything. Well, theoretically, yes, but we have to honor our minds. We have to honor where our minds are in a moment. And sometimes it was possible to be mindful of the self-hatred, and sometimes I needed to change the channel. I needed to go outside and look at a tree, or I needed to take a walk, or just open my eyes, or just do something else so that the mind wasn't glued to that self-hatred, finding ways to take a break from it. So while I am encouraging curiosity about being mindful in places where you get lost, I want to encourage you also to not beat yourself up when you see that, wow, that pattern's really strong. You know, compassion for the conditioning of our minds, compassion for the fact that, yeah, that one's been practiced a long time. You know, I practiced a lot of self-hatred in my life. It had a lot of momentum. And so to give myself a break, to not feel like it was a problem, that I couldn't be mindful of that in a particular moment. So those are a few thoughts, comments, questions, reflections. Yeah, in the back.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
I'm spending some time at home recently, and I'm currently living with my sister, and of course there's a history there, and so I'm noticing lately that there's a lot of frustration arising in my relationship with her, and I can, like today actually, like I kind of got really frustrated and I lost my cool, and I saw that I was like kind of scolding her in a way. She's younger than me, and I've always taken sort of a older sister, almost like motherly role with her. And I could see it happening. I knew that it wasn't really that beneficial, but I could see it happening, but I couldn't stop it.
I know that one.
It's like, I know it's there. And it's just, like you said, it has a momentum of its own. So it's like when something like this is happening, it's like, I know it's happening, but I can't stop it.
And you can't stop it. Yeah. You know, what to do there? I mean, it's like partly, there was some awareness of what was happening, right? I mean, you were aware, wow, I'm scolding, you know, and that's going on. And yet there wasn't strength enough of mindfulness to say, turn the ship or change the channel. And yet there was enough mindfulness to be aware of the feeling of whatever the frustration was, of the attitude towards your sister, of feeling like you needed to scold her. So there was some presence there. What was that experience? Was it unpleasant? Yes, so you noticed the unpleasantness. Did you notice body sensations? Did you notice moods, emotions?
Like there was tension in the body.
Tension in the body, yeah.
But I don't think it was like fully received, you know, like not all of the attention was there.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, when we see something with mindfulness but can't stop it, usually there is a kind of it's a slightly weaker kind of mindfulness. But at the same time, there is a mindfulness there that can receive in particular, oh, this doesn't feel good. you know, oh, this doesn't feel good. And that itself is part of the function of mindfulness, is that it as we wake up into these patterns, these in particular the unskillful patterns, the mind begins to get an education that this is not something that is conducive to well-being in the present moment. And that itself is something that helps the mind over time start to both be able to be more present when that happens, but also to begin to let go of that tendency in the mind. So it's not a mistake that it feels unpleasant when we wake up into those difficult mind states and we can't stop them. It actually is part of how the practice works. And so if you can at least take some sense of, yeah, okay, I can't stop it, but at least I can I can feel something of this and know how this impacts a being to feel this way, how this impacts me. And so you're essentially, partly what you're doing there is you're receiving the impact of being in that state while you're in the state. You would be receiving the impact of that at some point if you weren't aware of it. There'd probably be a little more wholehearted jumping on the scolding and the frustration. And, you know, what might happen is that your sister comes back with a lashing out, and then it's like, oh, then you wake up. Then you see, oh, right, I did that again. So, you know, at least you're seeing in the moment. You're seeing something in a moment. And that may, while it may not be, you may not be able to stop at the same time, it may not be quite as fully bought into as it would be if you weren't mindful at all.
So. I think I'm realizing as I'm listening to you and talking is that part of the reason why it feels the desire to express what I'm thinking in that moment is that there's somehow a subtle a belief that, like, it's when I'm feeling this way, or it's only in cases like this where I can tell her what I'm truly feeling. Uh-huh. And so, like, you know, I'm thinking, well, if I set aside some time to, like, calmly tell her how I'm really feeling, you know, like maybe the anxiety or the fear that's underlying the frustration, then maybe there wouldn't, I mean, it'll still come up, but maybe there wouldn't be as much of an feeling like I need to say what's on my mind when I'm feeling this frustration at her and concern about her.
Yeah, you know? So that's an interesting thing to recognize, that you might play with that edge of expressing something when you're not feeling it. You know, it's like, you know, yesterday when we were having that conversation, I got really frustrated, and, you know, just you could play with that edge. Yeah. Thank you. And we need to stop.